freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go. It's another Brock and Salk podcast. We just stink, man. The great Bruce Drennan. I was thinking about Bruce Drennan over the weekend.
Were you?
I was.
With Valbuena. Oh.
And, you know, obviously, rest in peace. But I was in one of those games. I think it was the one the Mariners won in extra innings, one of those close games, right? I just found myself thinking, you know who would probably get the game-winning hit here if he was on the team is Luis Valbuena. I mean, you know, sad, incredibly sad what happened. But I just found myself thinking, like, he is the kind of guy who would always get a hit against the Mariners in those big, not necessarily that the game was big, but that the situation was big in the game, and he'd come up with a hit or double or something like that.
He's that guy.
Valbuena.
We got a gazillion things to
Valbuena.
Do.
There he goes.
Valbuena.
Just give him back to the Mets,
to
man.
Honing Valley.
So you hear Bruce Drennan and Valbuena.
Yeah.
I still hear Jim Mora. I realize I never paid off my melatonin and M&M dream. So let me just do that real quickly because I got a lot of hate on Twitter about that we never got to it. Just say this. I'll condense it really quickly. And it basically ended with me screaming back at Jim Mora. Instead of taking the high road, which I did, I screamed back at him. And I said, basically, if any quarterback knows what it's like to be soft and underachieve and get hurt, it's me.
And I would so I just very like little stocking with Brock Huard, as you say.
So I kind of just went crazy on crazy right back at him, like compared myself to Rosen and our careers and knowing what it's like to maybe not achieve, and Jim didn't know what to do with it.
Like, see, I think that would have driven him crazy if you had done that. Like, I think it would have been just you guys continuing to amp it up, whereas when you just sort of took the high road, he felt so sheepish that he sort of had to be like, it's not really serious.
I mean, we're friends.
Yeah, we're just friends.
Yeah, I'll come on the show. I'll talk about it.
Sure, of course.
I'll stand up for my guy.
So, anywho, I'm glad we got that taken care of. Valbuena, Bruce Drennan, Jim Mora, melatonin. M&M's had another great dream last night.
Don't tell me about your dreams. We're going to talk to Chris Myers, which will be fun because he's your new partner. Congratulations, Brock. That's really where we need to start. Is the hearty congratulations. Woo-hoo! You have finally moved beyond the irrelevance of the college game NFL, the big time. Brock.
Yes, I think I told you this. There were a few different friends that I called. This opportunity presented itself.
Let people understand. Brock is going to be calling NFL games on Fox this year with Chris Myers and Greg Jennings. Is Greg Jennings there for all of them or just some?
I don't know if he's there for all of them, but certainly to get the season started. And I think the majority of them, for sure.
So that will be your Fox crew this year, which is incredible. So no college football for you. You're not doing the fifth Big 12 game or whatever Fox has. You're doing the NFL.
Brock, you don't have to take this.
Yes,
and by the way, Jen Hale is on the sidelines. Actually, she's in the first row. That's where the sideline reporters will be this year.
Okay.
So she'll be the sideline reporter on our crew as well. Yes, good crew. It's a great first slate of games. Minnesota, Green Bay, week one. We have Green Bay, I believe, week two. I don't know if this stuff is announced, so I got to be a little bit careful. But yes, I know Minnesota hosts Green Bay week number one and a week from Sunday, which will be just absolutely fantastic.
Awesome.
And yeah, about a month ago, I kind of caught wind and talking to my agent that this may be a possibility. And I sought some different counsel. And I even told you, Mike, when I called you, I was very honest. And I said, Mike, you're not the first phone call here, but I trust you. I've told you before you should be my agent. And even you said, well, I mean, you obviously know the decision, right?
Like, this isn't a hard one.
It's not a hard
one. It's sort of like I always tell that story about my buddies and like the 3 21s that we pulled on our big bets. And like Joel has his 16 against the 9. He's like, what do I do? And we're like, Joel, you know what to do. It's your decision, but there's not really much of a decision here. You've got to hit it.
Yep.
Brock, you can be in irrelevance talking to, you know, a couple of people who still like college football, or you can do the NFL. This isn't hard.
Kyle?
So when Brock called me, he was anticipating such a response. You know, I could call, you know, I wanted to talk to someone who really respects college football and what that is. Because I know when I call Mike, he's like, college football? If a tree falls in the woods, football? You have the NFL? So, It, yeah, it played out as expected. Yes. And Brock, you made the right call, a fantastic call, and yes, major congrats. That's
well,
awesome.
Thankfully, they made it. Thankfully, I
oh, you didn't even have to make the call.
They
just told you?
Yes, I kind of, yep. I think it was on that Saturday, last Saturday. I was like, oh, well, here's what they decided to do. And yes, that is a huge blessing, an amazing opportunity. And I'll tell you, just like, not to nerd out too much, but just watching some tape here over the last week or so since I knew our assignment, man, what a different game. I've always known it's a different game, but when you actually do the nitty gritty kind of behind the scenes and you see things behind the scenes or in your own prep, it really is. I mean, just the complexities of it, the relationships in it. I think you're going to hear this from Chris Myers as well. Just the information that is shared, the partnership between the league and Roger Goodell and these networks is just very, very different than the college football that is so much more scattered and doesn't have nearly, I guess, the commonality, right? Of 32 teams all under one umbrella, very fractured. And we're seeing that in college football.
Well, congrats. I'm psyched. If nothing else, it means I'll get to watch you. So I'm excited about that. I know sometimes you're on doing these calls. I always forget. They're different times.
Yes.
Different network. It gets so confusing.
I was thinking about this because Mike for years has been very, very proud of his NFL Sunday ticket.
Yep.
And you've chosen that over the Pac-12 network. We've heard about it.
And now it's finally paying off.
And now I was like, oh, Brock's going to be doing some game and Mike's going to be able to watch Brock every week.
Yeah. Brock will have, like, the Lions and Bills, and I'll be like, yeah, I watched. It was great. Matt Stafford threw a few picks. The other kid couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
So I was watching Red Zone, and it said to go to this game, hit to channel 554, which I did.
Yes.
And because I have Sunday ticket, I chose to watch the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
My guy, Andrew Siciliano, doing Red Zone on that's how that goes.
I'm more of a Scott Hansen guy on
Comcast. I get it, but Siciliano will give you – anyway. All right. Let's normally, Brock, we would probably launch today with a whole bunch of NFL stuff. And we have this. We'll get to the Seahawks in a few minutes, I promise. So if you're here for the beginning of the Seahawks season, Brock's got a game built on my game, which I think will be a ton of fun. We'll do that in a few minutes. But I the Mariners have done so much here in the last week or so that I'd like to start off and talk about them a little bit because I love what they've done. I love it.
Even when they traded Taiwan, as we talked about last week.
Yeah, it's not what I wanted them to do, but I've heard a little bit about kind of how that, yes, I like what they've done. Okay, just overall, and it's not just about the pieces necessarily, although that's, you know, that's relevant. But I think what I like so much about it is that they stayed disciplined to their plan and were opportunistic in the market.
Mm.
They stayed disciplined to their plan and they were opportunistic in the market.
And the plan was not to win this year.
Plan's never been to win this year, right?
The plan was not to go for it.
Nope.
The plan was to continue to protect the young assets, to grow them behind the scenes as much as possible. Certainly hope to see the Kyle Lewis's get going and Evan White's get going and J.P. Crawford's get going and the guys that are at the stage to get going. We're going to give them the runway to do so. But this was not a season to go for it. This was not a season to try to win. This was not a season, to your point, to deviate from the plan.
Yeah, what I like is that they didn't get scared of their plan. I think it's easy to come up with the plan and say, okay, we're going to take this thing down to the studs, and it's going to take a few years. We're going to rebuild it, and then we'll see what happens. It's easy to start that plan. Well, it's not, but it was necessary, and thank God they made that choice a couple of years ago. Okay. But it's really, I think, challenging not to get scared of your own plan in the middle. Right? You're a couple of years in, nobody's paying attention, no one's really talking about you, their ratings are down this year on Root Sports. Obviously you wouldn't be able to see crowd numbers, but I get a sense that, you know, I don't think they would have had packed crowds every single day if we weren't in the current environment. It's easy to get scared off and say, well, we can't wait another couple of years. We got to figure this out. Austin Nola's hitting now, so we got to keep him around. Taiwan Walker's pitching well, so we got to keep him and kind of ride this thing out. It's easy to kind of get caught up in that, and they didn't, right? They didn't get nervous that they weren't winning. They stayed with the plan, and I think it's going to work out for them. I mean, look, they can maybe re-sign Taiwan Walker down the road. It sounded that way when listening to Jerry on with Danny and Paul. That was, you know, just sort of the vibe I got. Maybe, you know, you got all these outfielders now. Maybe you trade one of them for pitching. I don't know. But I just kind of I love the mentality behind it, and I don't know that they were looking to trade Nola. In fact, I know they weren't. They love Nola. They love his makeup. They love his catching ability. They love his flexibility.
I mean, seriously, the gumbo, the crawfish. Right.
You don't like New Orleans. You're the one who doesn't like Nola. You. The only person I know who doesn't like New Orleans is, quite frankly, you.
Yeah, actually, you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you get some Saints games this year. That's a possibility.
You know, not to poo-poo this in any way, because I largely totally agree. But in some ways, right, isn't this the year that's actually in some ways broken right for the Mariners? And what I mean by that is you didn't have to trade Marco Gonzalez. Nobody came knocking for Jared Kelenic. Mm-hmm. This wasn't these moves that you made for Taijuan Walker and Nola. I mean, these were players that weren't going to be largely a part of your plan in the years ahead anyhow. I mean, in some ways, can't you, you know, and also in this pandemic with no fans and no crowd.
I don't know if you know that. I mean, look, Taijuan Walker, yeah, the deal was up at the end of the year, so you don't know whether you would there was anything there. But Nola could have. I mean, Austin Nola was, what, he's 30 years old, 29, 30 years old?
I think he's going to be 31. I think he's 31.
He's 30 right now. Yeah. So in 2 years, he'd be 32 and your everyday catcher and all the other positional flexibility. You have him under club control. I mean, yeah, he's coming up near the end of his prime in theory, but he's like a second-year player. Yeah. I mean, you could have kept him through the whole thing. I mean, and he's a leader on the team. You saw Marco Gonzalez essentially crying over him leaving. I mean, they love him. They love him. So, yeah, I think trading him wasn't something they were looking to do. But when you get another top 60 prospect, and the guy I really like in this is Ty France, dude who can really hit. He's not a very good third baseman. He's not a defensive player. But that's where some of their development is. They think that with effort and with some coaching, they can kind of get him to where he needs to be. I love that. And by the way, the kid Munoz they got, the pitcher, have you watched any of him, Brock?
I have not.
Dude.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Oh, dude.
Oh, you're watching him.
Well, oh. I heard a little bit about him from some people.
You're watching tapes.
Well, no, I may just watch a little.
I mean, watched a little of him last year. He came up a little last year.
Dude, he throws 100, but in this weird, I mean, there's a little Edwin Diaz to it. It's like a super funky delivery, and then he's throwing average speed of, what, 99.9, I think it was last year. He's averaging 100 miles an hour. So he has a chance, once he comes back from Tommy John here, to be like a legitimate back of the bullpen stud. Now, I don't know if he's going to turn into that. I mean, that's where injury and coaching and some luck all kind of ties into it, but he's supposed to be a potential stud. France can hit. I don't know if he can play defense. I don't know if he's a third baseman. I don't know if he can play second, but he gives you some flexibility, you know, maybe
after
Kyle Seager.
Do we have to
give
up Adams, though? I mean, the relievers like him don't
blow on trees. I'm not just going to forget about Austin Adams.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to forget about Grizzly Adams.
The other thing, I'm going to just ignore that for now. The other thing is that, as much as I wouldn't have necessarily wanted to trade Taijuan Walker, from what I've heard, and they can't say who the guy is, he'll be a top 20 kind of prospect guy.
Mm.
Not in baseball, but in their organization.
Is this a put-a-put-a-put-a-put-a-null?
This is the put-a-put-a-null, yes. Understand, they're not allowed to, this year, they're not even allowed to mention anybody who's not on the taxi squad.
Right.
So anyone, you know, lower than double A is, forget about it. Even some double A guys, you don't even get a chance. So he's supposed to be pretty
good. Telling me that the Mariners farm system, that based on kind of midseason here, and I'm sure we'll get Keith Law's and others' new rankings and Baseball America's new rankings, but a farm system that just, what, a year or two ago was 28th, 29th in the league, is now, I think, consensus top five.
Yeah, and maybe
and
even
with
top
the
three.
Additions of Trammell and the popularity from the Blue Jays, you're going to be looking at a consensus top three.
Yeah, this puts, what did Shannon say? This is seven players in the top 100, according to Baseball America, and that doesn't include Kyle Lewis. Seven players in the top 100 for Baseball America, and that doesn't include Kyle Lewis.
So you're giving yourself a chance.
I'd say you're giving yourself a chance. I mean, you know, there's some pitching, there's some hitting. There aren't too many premier position guys in there. There's a bunch of outfielders, first base. You know what I mean? So, you know, Noelvi Marte is the one shortstop.
He's 99 overall.
Yeah, and he's a ways away. So you don't necessarily have marquee players at marquee positions, but you've got some guys who should come up and be legitimate major leaguers, if not major league stars. And you're seeing it now, obviously, with Kyle Lewis and everything that he's done this year. So I Howdy and I were talking about this last week. He's not in today. I apologize. But Howdy and I were kind of talking about it. And I love his idea, which is if you looked at that at the free agent list, not this coming offseason, but the one after, have you seen the shortstops?
That would be Francisco Lindor, I believe.
Trevor Story, Baez, Seager. I mean, there's one other guy, too. There's like four or five elite level shortstops who can hit. all going to be free agents coming up after the 21 season. Imagine you fast forward here a year to next off season, year and a half, trying to sign one of those guys. But let's say it's Lindor. Maybe it's Story. I don't care. It's one of those guys. You got to pay some big money for them. Yeah. You move J.P. Crawford to second, and now all of a sudden you've built yourself a team. Kelnick's up and ready. You know, Rodriguez may be up and ready. Kyle Lewis is established. Evan White's been in the league a couple of years. They like this kid they just got the other day as a catcher. They've got Tom Murphy, who showed that he looked like a major league catcher.
You said this, Ty France Day is an everyday starter at a corner infield.
Yes.
And so they've already locked up Evan White, so that leaves one spot.
Yeah, and my guess is he'll play a little second base even in the meantime because, you know, Shed Long hasn't exactly shown mm-hmm. that he's a major leaguer. But, you know, you've got some options with another guy who can really hit, and then you start bringing in some of that pitching. You got a couple. You got to probably buy some bullpen and maybe buy one other kind of big league starter. Could you be the White Sox? Yeah. Mm. White Sox are right there. They're one of the best teams in the league this year. They were right where you were 2 years ago. Remember we went to go see them in spring training, the three of us?
A Kopech pitch?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's where, and the White Sox were terrible. Yes. They looked awful. And here they are a couple of years later going through this rebuild. And oh, by the way, they didn't even get the benefit of some of the things they were hoping to do.
Well, I'm going to say what I said earlier, and that's not to diminish any of this whatsoever. Baseball is a game of breaks. You could do everything right in the process of it. You can get a perfect swing. You can have the right alignments. You can do many things right, and the result just unfortunately doesn't go your way. You can throw a great pitch mm-hmm. that, you know, gets 9 out of 10 guys out, but unfortunately Joe Mauer pulls his hands in and he can put it down the line in a way that's just truly unique. I do feel like this season, this abbreviated 60-game season, just kind of the craziness that we find ourselves in, I think was advantageous both at this trade deadline, that it was 30 games, that it was, what, 4 or 5 starts from Taijuan Walker. It didn't have to be 10 or 15, mm-hmm. right? That it was a month and a half of Nola, you know, hitting really well and doing an awesome job and a tremendous teammate, you know, that provided. And then they developed him. They absolutely get credit for that over last year and into this year. But, you know, that it was afforded them this opportunity at the trade deadline to make these moves. I think it was a positive in that way. And yeah. I also think that it's a positive if you're in this process, to your point, like stick to our guns. Easier to do that in a 60 game season. Easier to do that in a 30 game stretch to make these moves. Yeah. Easier to do that when you don't have fans that you're listening to that are living and dying over every single pitch and getting mad at you and so frustrated over a 10 game losing streak and not showing up to the stadium. Like, and it's okay to say those things. It's baseball. It's some of the process of it, right? Where the results at times are out of your control. And I hope that this process of this season is actually advantageous to the Mariners. And I would argue that, you know, through this trade deadline, it maybe is more advantageous to them than just about any of their peers in baseball.
I think that's incredibly well said. I agree with you. And it's a good backdrop here. Let me just give you a couple of quick observations and things I've picked up and talking to some folks around the game here in the last week or so. One, and this is just one I've watched. I mentioned this on Tom, Jake, and Stacy last week. Have you noticed how clean the Mariners have played? Not perfect. They've made a couple mistakes. I know Marmolejos got thrown out at third the other night, but even that was with one out and late in the game.
Yeah, there's not been the boneheaded mistakes of years.
And there
were
a couple at the beginning.
Look, they've gotten picked off bases. And, like, I mean, that stuff's going to happen. No one's expecting, especially the youngest team in baseball, to be perfect. But they've played relatively clean baseball to this point in the year. I'm sure I'll say that, and tomorrow they'll make, like, 12 ridiculous base running errors. But for the most part, they haven't done boneheaded stuff. They haven't made a ton of base running errors. They haven't thrown the ball all over the field and, you know, gotten greedy and compounded errors or mistakes. They've played pretty reasonably clean baseball for the youngest team in the league.
Yes.
That's a really positive sign for me.
It is positive, and that's a little bit of what you would expect of young players to do what you ask them to do.
No, I would not.
Really?
No, I'd expect young players to make mistakes and throw the ball over the yard.
And with inexperience, maybe some of those fielding things, or if they're talent deprived, maybe some of those things. But it was Robbie Cano and Gene Segura that were the two worst base runners in the history of the Seattle Mariners. And they were just guys like, yeah, I'll just kind of do what I want to do. I'll take that extra base, or I'll pay attention when I want to pay attention, or right? And I think young, hungry players that are trying to prove that they can play in this league, that are striving to show that they've got the goods to stick around in this league, or some that have been like Nola or Lopes that have been minor leaguers for a long time and so doggone appreciate the opportunity to be in the big leagues, may have a little more focus. Not necessarily talent, you're right. You know, they may boot the ball around, they may not be good enough, they may take a bad angle. I'm not saying that,
but from
a concentration and focus standpoint, you should, I would hope, get your best out of guys trying to prove they belong.
I don't know that that's always been the case in baseball, but it sure has been in this team. It's a credit to the young guys. It's a credit to Scott Servais, and a credit to Jerry DePoto's group and in the types of players that they've gone after who have some of that, you know, baseball IQ to play the game that way. So that's one. And did you watch the 10-inning win on Sunday? It was crazy going back and forth between that and the ball.
No, I was watching golf. I apologize.
I don't blame you. What was going on with the golf was insane.
I was watching DJ and Rom that hit was some putts.
Unreal. And I was just going back and forth and trying not to miss anything. And I just, you know, I was getting so bored at the end of the game. I've been watching baseball for a while. I was so bored. This is the most boring thing. It's tied. They're going into extra innings. I was just hoping it ended soon because I hated what I was watching. And thankfully, baseball responded to my fear. They put a guy on second base.
Ghost runner in second.
It's a good thing because the game stunk at that point. I mean, it was tied. It was late. I really wanted it to end. I mean, it was a Sunday afternoon. I had so many other things I needed to do.
Sarcasm. It's just dripping right now.
I got to tell you. I love so many things baseball's done, and I think the whole three-batter rule has been great this year. You haven't even really noticed it.
I haven't noticed it at
all. It's made it work a little bit faster in the end of games, so you're not having 25 pitching changes, et cetera. The idea of putting a runner on second base in the 10th inning is the most Mickey Mouse, ridiculous, embarrassing thing baseball's ever done.
Oh, in the Mariners versus Angels game, it was fine.
I was enjoying the game. The game was good. It was tied in the 10th. Who's turning that off? Nobody. No, they're not. You want to fix it, do something about the 5th. There's no problem in the 10th. The 10th's great. Everybody likes the 10th. Maybe it'll go to the 11th or 12th. The pressure will only build. That's what baseball is all about. Take that base runner, put him back on the bench where he belongs. It's ridiculous.
Is it more Mickey Mouse than what golf is doing, by the way, in this playoff? And DJ starts the tournament at 10 under par.
Oh, yeah, that's silly. They've done that the last
few
years.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, but it's not. It's actually not even enough, right? I mean, like, DJ's going to have like a one-stroke lead.
2-2, 10-8, 6.
It's kind of silly. Like, they're not giving him enough of an edge.
It doesn't make this week more interesting, but it almost made last week more interesting at Olympia because now so much was on that playoff between DJ and Rom with $10 million at stake this week.
I also get what they're trying to do. They were trying to avoid what happened a few years ago when Tiger won the tournament, but Justin Rose was the winner of the whole thing. And it just felt kind of empty.
Anticlimactic.
It was like, this dude won the tour championship. Oh, my God. Did Tiger win all the money? No, he just won this little event. Oh. Well, who won? Justin Rose. Well, where did he finish? 12th. It's like, that was a little anticlimactic. I kind of understand. You're right. It's not perfect. But come on. The 10th inning thing is silly.
Yeah, they did put it up. And they're like, Dustin Johnson, well, at that point, if it looked like he was going to win, will be staked to a 10-stroke lead.
Yeah.
Or he'll start at 10 under.
Which,
good grief.
Yeah.
But the next guy's finished a 30 under last week.
If you were watching that game afterwards, Kyle Lewis, who scored that run, does he get credit for a run scored? He does, by the way.
Yes, he does.
He didn't get on base, but he does get credit for a run scored.
Correct.
Ridiculous. He also made the last out of that game. He caught a fly ball in center field, and so the camera was just kind of on him after the game. His energy afterwards was just, he's got juice. He's got presence. He's having so much fun playing the game.
Yes. And it helps when you're off to the best start of any Mariner, I think, through 50 games in basically every category, other than hits, obviously, Ichiro at his age and average and such. But anybody not named Ichiro, when you look at the first 50-some games of their start of their career, there's no one close, and that's Griffey. Alvin Davis was right there, but he is off to an extraordinary start, so the results are there. But even on top of that, you know, this is a little bit of that grit, right? Yeah. This is a little bit of adversity that you've got to overcome, that it hasn't just been handed to you after you won the Golden Spikes Award, that you went through real adversity, and you come back and you appreciate it, and then you have success on top of it. Yeah, you feel his love to play, and that is awesome.
Well, it's all kind of been said about him, but I'll just add a few things. I mean, the home runs have obviously been great. Taking what he's given, everyone's mentioned his ability to go the other way. I've been really impressed with his defense. It hasn't shown up as a problem at all. Is he the best center fielder in the league? No, but it hasn't shown up as a problem the way it did last year in the corner spot. So, and then just talking to a few folks, they say he just seems like a different guy. Hmm. Like he's just happy and enjoying it. And I think all that is great.
I love the Oppo Taco, by the way.
Who doesn't? Yes. JP Crawford, still the big mystery to me.
Yes, it is.
Defense has been really good.
Yep.
The bat was great, then subpar. Now it's coming back a little bit, so the bat's kind of in between. I love his leadership and just sort of his ability to kind of galvanize some of the crew around him. By all accounts, just he's one of those guys. You can see it when he plays. We've mentioned this before. His hustle, that dude runs hard every single time out of the box. He doesn't compound mistakes. I just, again, for a young player, I love the way he plays the game. So I started asking a few folks about it, and I think this is probably the best quote I heard about him is, look, he can absolutely be part of a good team as a starter if he's hitting at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah.
And if that's where this works out, and that's what we're kind of talking about, if you could go get a Trevor Story or another big bat who can play a premier position like that, second base or shortstop, and you could have J.P. Crawford playing every day but hitting eighth, now you've got something.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a really stupid question and you can shoot it down. And I probably shouldn't do these things without being more well researched and studied on it. But why do I feel this total perception thing? So again, you can destroy it, but why do I feel like most elite teams are usually have an elite shortstop or at least someone up the middle that is elite? Can you be an elite World Series contending team and have a shortstop that hits 230 with no pop in eighth or ninth in the lineup?
Can you?
Yeah.
Sure, if you make up for it another way.
Yeah.
I mean,
perennially. Am I wrong? Is your perception similar to mine?
Look, it's the most important position on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, other than pitcher, you know, it's right there.
And
it's
that starts when you were 10 years old, position. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're playing Little League, put your best athlete, your best player at shortstop and, you know, kind of like little Pop Warner teams, put them at quarterback and or running back or, you know, it just feels.
All again, the other guys are ex-shortstops. I mean, everyone else on the field's an ex-shortstop, except a few of the outfielders.
Right.
That's just sort of how it is. Yeah. I mean, I think Crawford's certainly playing it defensively, but there's a lot of guys out there who can pick it at shortstop, right? If you wanna succeed with him, you probably got to have enough players on your team who can hit, which they should have, by the way. When Kelnick and Julio and the rest of these guys come up, he should be hitting eighth.
Yes.
And that then you'll really have something.
Can he just transition to second?
I think so. I think that's pretty easy.
Good enough athlete.
I think a good shortstop goes second base without a problem.
Yeah.
So. What have you made of Evan White?
Unbelievable glove.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
You like the glove.
Oh, do I like the glove? I don't like the glove, Mike.
No, you love the glove.
I love the glove.
What do you make of the decision to sign him? Like the long term? How are you feeling about that right now?
What did you say earlier? What you love about this season with the Mariners? That they've stuck to their guns?
Yeah. They stayed disciplined to their plan, but were opportunistic to the market.
So I'm going to stay disciplined to the plan and realize in the end game, this is going to be the best thing for our team and for Evan.
Mm.
And I don't think it's putting any extra pressure on him. I don't think he's, you know, struggling at times because he's feeling the weight or the eyeballs in the clubhouse. Like, man, why did you get paid? Why'd they take care of you and not take care of me? And you hadn't even had a big league at bat. I don't think there's any of that nonsense. If there was, then maybe I'd start to have a little bit of concern, but I don't think that's the case. Dude is busting it. Dude plays unbelievable defense. The guy is just struggling to major league pitching, which is very much to be expected. So,
and we've seen some of the flashes in not just one at bat, but in some streaks of games where you see that he can put it all together. So I'm with
okay
you.
With
I think it's
right
been
now.
Fine. And to your point about sort of the reaction in the clubhouse, you know, he and Kyle Lewis are like best friends. Like I was reading the other day, Lookout Landing had that they were in each other's weddings or something like that. I mean, like they're close. And I think that stuff helps and has been part of the good chemistry that you've seen from the Mariners so far this year.
You think
so.
Kelnick's talking smack to him though, like texting him?
Probably.
Like,
what
do you
start
think? Hitting? Bro, can you just like smell you later? You know,
smell
just
you soon. I'm on your track, hot on your heels.
So anyway, there's a lot of good stuff in there. I like what I've seen from Sheffield. But let's be clear, the real question marks, the thing that will be reflective of what's going on here, they're not here yet. That's Hancock and Carlson and Gilbert. Are those three kids that's three starting pitchers? Are they what you need?
Is the expectation still that Carlson's lumped into that group?
I'm putting Carlson in
there. I know he was drafted with that status, but I just haven't. I've He's, arm injuries just haven't heard him referenced.
I'll put him in there. I think he's still got that kind of upside. And there's a few other guys, Isaiah Campbell and a few more. I mean, like, but I guess I really should say Gilbert and Hancock are really the two, both in the top 100.
Kirby.
Yeah, put Kirby in there. But, I probably should have put Kirby instead of Carlson.
You should have.
Sorry, I probably confused
him. Mike, shame on you.
I confused the two of them. I'll be honest. Okay, they're both sort of the same in my mind.
Kirby, Carlson.
I think I meant Kirby instead of Carlson.
Okay,
I meant Hancock, not Sterling.
Remember,
Hitchcock.
Kirby's the one that had like one walk in like 90 games.
Pretty good.
Just remember that.
Just get them all up here, man. I'm psyched to see all those guys when they're
have
ready.
Have we heard anything, by the way, down in Tacoma? I saw a picture the other day of Logan Gilbert and Kelnick going at it down there in Rainier Land. Have we heard any? And this is usually where Howdy comes in, but Howdy had some issues.
Austin Shenton, the kid from Bellingham, hit a parked one over the center field wall above that huge batter's eye.
Good.
Like the fifth ever.
It's
who
important.
Won.
Okay.
Was it Canseco or Maguire?
Right.
I mean, it was some.
Let me guess. He did that off Zach Groats.
Oh, he may have.
Do they put out any numbers down there on the taxi squad? Have we seen
they're
any?
All just
I haven't heard about their scrimmages.
They're all taking batting practice off of Groats.
Well, I'm
how
sure
are they
the
doing?
A's are coming in this week. They're bringing their taxi squad.
Yeah, how
they're
doing against the other team's taxi.
None of that.
Okay.
All right, Brock. That's some good baseball talk, and I don't know. I felt like we kind of needed some of it. The Mariners, kind of what they've done, the trade deadline, and again,
they're fun.
They are fun.
I look forward to watching this team. They're
I'm
not
really
like
upset about these
fans.
Two games they're not playing because of the Oakland COVID thing. Like, what do you mean I can't watch Mariners these two nights? Like, the night that they voted not to play, and we'll talk more about that here at the end of this podcast, I supported what they did. I feel really good about it. I'll also say that night I was like, man, I really want to watch the Mariners. Like, I understand it. I wasn't mad at them. I don't mind being inconvenienced, obviously, for the greater good that they felt they needed to support. But I was bummed. I really like watching them every night. They've been fun.
You think Jerry's bummed that AJ Preller just like set the bar at a level that I don't know if he's ever, even he, Jerry himself, is ever going to be able to jump over?
I think even Jerry thinks that AJ Preller's a bit much. I think Jerry's like, all right, dude, tone it down. Your team's in first place and you just turned over a quarter of your roster. Like,
been a long time for the Padres, bro. Been a long time
tone
since
it
they've
down.
Had this opportunity.
All right, Brock, some football talk here before we talk to your new partner, Chris Myers. Last week, we did who, what, when, where, why, right?
Yes, loved it.
This week, just five questions. Four questions. Who, and who?
Yes.
All right.
Is that okay that I kind of took your game and just morphed it this week? We can go back to who, what, when, where, why, and how.
Dude, you know that that's what my games are here for. They're here to be morphed. I love it. So as we get ready for the NFL, give me some, let's start with this. Who will be the surprise cut before the season starts?
And I tried to, it's specifically Seahawks, right? I mean, there's a little more
for
me specifically. So you said around the NFL.
Oh, sorry. I just meant here.
Yeah, I'm going to land this one right at home.
KJ Wright.
I mean, that would be the biggest surprise cut. No question.
That's still going to be my answer. They cut KJ Wright, signed Jadeveon Clowney.
Mm. They cut KJ Wright and try to bring him back on a minimum deal and save some millions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the kid's playing really well. Brooks, they seem happy with him. Like, how many linebackers and safeties do you need when you can't get near the quarterback? Like, bring in Clowney. Based on the Ngakoue thing, it shouldn't cost even as much as $12 million. So, okay, if you need to clear a little space, cut KJ, and if you can bring him back, bring him back.
Shaquem Griffin, can he fit in? Would that be a surprise?
No.
Yeah, that would not be a surprise.
Wow. I mean, I'm not saying he would definitely get cut, but
yeah, BJ Finney.
I guess
brought in here to kind of be the center, and you know, had some experience, and he paid him, I don't know, some pretty decent.
4 weeks
points
ago, that would have been a shocker.
Yeah.
Now, after seeing Posick take those reps and Britt come in for a visit, you can start to see that writing on the wall and be like, well, that guy's fighting for a job.
I'll tell you what, man, if these offensive linemen don't work out, we're going to go back to that. Hey, did you want four or five guys who were B players, or did you want Jack Conklin? And that conversation is going to heat up again real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, they've had surprise cuts. I mean, every year that's kind of a part of the deal. It's what they've done. And every year we go, well, really? Him?
Yep.
David Moore? Really? I mean, I think in some situations, because of the lack of offseason, people that have done it before are going to get an opportunity. It's going to be really hard for a young guy that has not had a live rep in the NFL. But, yeah, there's a few names. If I'm Shaquem Griffin, I'm a little bit nervous heading into this weekend.
Who
sure.
Will lead this team in sacks in 2020?
First name Benson, last name Mayowa.
With how many? Four and a half? Six?
Six and a half.
Whoa,
six.
Whoa, big year six. For Brock.
Hello.
Wow.
Well, he had seven
Brock,
last
optimistic.
Year. I mean, he had seven
but you
last
told me,
year.
Brock, like someone's got to get the sacks.
There's no question. I mean, you're going to fall into a few of them. A tackle and guard are going to collide. They're going to fall down. You're going to run a stunt to get free.
Some quarterback runs out of bounds and you get credited with it.
I mean, you get to chase down Josh McCown with a darn hamstring.
Right.
He's behind the line. Maybe you catch him instead of
maybe.
Not. I'm going to say Benson Mayo leads this team. He's going to get ample opportunity. He's going to be the Leo. He's empowered. He believes it. He thinks he's great. He thinks he's 10 foot tall, which is awesome. He said, you know, on his Zoom call a couple weeks ago, you know, everyone's hating on the D-line and no one was talking about them in Oakland last year. And well, no one talked about them after the year either because they only had 28 sacks, I think also, or 30 as a team, but he had seven of them. So I'm going to say Benson Mayoa as of right now on paper is going to lead this team.
I'm going to go with a 53-way tie with zero. Not one person gets a sack the entire year. Based on the way we've crushed the defensive line and their pass rush ability, it comes down to zero. And if they somehow hop over it and get a sack, then we'll throw parties for them.
Anybody
and say,
gets
wow.
a double-digit sacks. Jaren Reed had double-digit
no.
sacks.
Nobody gets double, no.
Nobody gets a double-digit
sacks. No chance.
Okay.
No. And Jamal Adams leads the team with like five.
Wow. All right. Okay.
I don't know. All right, third question. Who's been the star camp?
Marquise Blair has been the star of camp, in my opinion.
He sure sounds that way. The you name know, that, I've heard the most.
Yeah, if you're looking
Are
for...
Are you removing Jamal Adams from this list? Jamal Adams has taken this camp by storm.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But he's expected to. Now, Marquise Blair has been definitely the
He's been the biggest surprise of camp
yes.
versus the star of camp.
Yeah, I think Jamal and DK and Russell and, you know, your star power players that Russell wanted and Russell believes you have to have in this league. I think they've all shined pretty bright, but kind of like the John Clayton was, the third most watched person on ESPN a few years back as far as FaceTime goes.
Yep.
Tim Tebow, you know, I think his name was mentioned more a few years back on ESPN than any other name mentioned on ESPN. And I would say that as far as just name mention, as far as popularity vote, as far as the Jake Heaps, the Dave Wymans, the Michael Bumpuses, the guys that are out there that have played in the league, yeah, I think the name that has resonated the most has been Marquise Blair.
Yeah, I mean, his name, he's been constant. We've heard about him. I'll tell you, the guy that I heard Dave Wyman talk about the other day was Carlos Hyde.
Ooh.
And he's been sort of and he's not the answer to this question, but I just,
Pete talked about him too after that one mock game.
Yeah. I don't know. Dave was mentioning, we think we were even running a promo on it too, that I heard of, like, you know, he's faster than Dave expected and ability to hit a hole and kind of go. If Rashad Penny's going to start the year on pop and
yes.
you know, right. I meant since he is,
yeah. Well, you said AF.
I know.
Dude rushed for 1,000 yards last year.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like
he's averaged over 4 yards a carry in his career, and that's kind of the barometer. On bad teams, he was under that mark. Last year, he was well over it and 1,000 yards. And this team should be able to run block. Can they pass block effectively in their division and in this conference?
Who
Very
knows?
Much to be determined. But right. Brandon Schell in this tight end group, in this tight end room, and what they're going to do, and obviously Dwayne Brown, and I think Posick is a big old dude and really athletic to get to the second level. And they love the athleticism of Damian Lewis, and they'll be able to move people, they'll be able to move people in the run game, and he should have some opportunity. And yeah, I think he's been a very pleasant surprise too.
Who are you most excited to watch this year?
It's the last one, right?
Yes.
You said four who, so I'm just trying to keep track here on my piece of paper. Who am I most excited to watch? Greg Olsen. I've heard people say.
Stop.
Greg Olsen.
You're most excited to watch a 40-year-old tight end?
I'm
saying that because you guys are going to be teammates at Fox?
I'm trying to go outside the box. Okay?
You sure
I'm
are.
I'm going to give you DK or Tyler or
Brock
Russell.
Brock wants to keep Olsen in the league. He's
or
like,
Jamal.
Oh, maybe he'll come back for
Brock's
another
trying
year.
To decide between Greg Olsen and Cedric Ebwehi. He's like, I one
sign,
of those two guys. Or
Chance Warmack hadn't opted out.
Is you sure it's not Jamarco
Olsen.
Jones? Remember
I'd
last year? That was the guy you couldn't wait to watch out of camp. Brock, who are you excited to see? Wow, Jamarco Jones.
Excuse me. JJ the Jet Plane was the name. And I would sign Greg Olsen to a multi-year deal now. I mean, I'd extend him for 2, 3, 4 years.
Keep him out of that broadcast booth. I think he's got a lot left. Pete Carroll's fun atmosphere.
I heard from somebody legitimately behind the scenes, kind of like you did some of your work and your due diligence with the baseball club in town. I heard from some folks legitimately that say he is the best tight end they've ever had. At 44 or whatever he is years old, that he has been that dominant, man, that good.
Over whom? They haven't had a tight end since Zach Miller.
Zach Miller was pretty good.
I know, since then. So that he's better than Zach Miller is what they're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep. As far as a blocker, as far as, you know, just physically, even where he's at, taking care of his body down the field, his hands, his just football IQ, all of it, that he is the best tight end they've had. And if that's the case in this offense in particular, that is, you know, and I said earlier this week that I think their receiver position is as thin, only behind the defensive tackle position on this roster, behind Tyler and DK, it gets extraordinarily thin, that he's going to be your third option. He's going to be your third down guy. He's going to be the security blanket of the quarterback. That if Russell loved DK last year, and we watched the fruits of that over the course of the season as DK exploded with a 1,000-yard year and exceeded all expectations, and who has been that guy this offseason that has worked out with Russell, that Russell, I think, has grown to greatly respect and admire as a player, it's Greg Olsen. And we know the difference tight ends can make in this league. You've seen it in San Francisco. You've seen it in Kansas City. And if you got one of the elite ones, and by all accounts behind the scenes, they think he's still an elite tight end, I'm excited to watch that.
It's a good one. I'll go with probably Jamal Adams. I mean, maybe that's cheating because he's just so obvious, but I'm just so excited to see. I mean, they gave Brock, they gave up two first-round picks for him.
Yes, they did.
In the meantime, the other guy we were talking about at the same time,
Yannick Ngakoue,
yep, went for chump change.
He went for a second and a fifth, and he took a $5.8 million
right.
pay cut.
I mean, it might end up being a second and a third if he plays great, but okay.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm excited for Jamal Adams. I think I'd rather have Jamal Adams than Ngakoue. I certainly love the personality and everything he's brought and the leadership, but he doesn't play as premier a position. They had three guys that I think you at least liked at the safety spot, and two firsts versus a second and a fifth. Like,
isn't it two firsts and a third?
Yeah. Well, they swapped out those third and fourth, but like, okay. Doesn't it seem like a lot more they gave up for him than yes. Minnesota did for Ngakoue?
Yes.
Now now look, he's a better player than Ngakoue. He's an all pro, right? I mean, he's a correct. Better player. But it seems like a lot.
It does, and I'm curious. You know, I'll play a little devil's advocate and say,
please do. Yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah, the market is what the market's willing to pay. And the market for Jamal Adams, if you wanted him, that's what it was, because other teams were offering a first and a third. And other teams were offering, right? I mean, I don't have to believe that.
Maybe that the Jets just said, we're not trading him unless. They didn't need to trade him.
No, I think they were kind of anxious to trade him. Nah, I think the noise got pretty loud.
I mean, he said Adam Gase was unfit to be the coach.
The Jets can win two games with him or two games without him. It doesn't really matter.
That's true.
I think the market was much higher for Jamal Adams.
But the Jets
don't
ultimately even have a
quarterback. That was the price he had.
And Jamal Adams had years left on his contract. He was going to come play. Yannick Ngakoue was able to be like, yeah, I'm not playing. See you later.
I don't know, man. I get it. I hope there's a good reason, and I'm really looking forward to watching him. But there is some pressure to live up to that, because that's a lot of capital paid to make it happen. But him and Marquise Blair, Quandre Diggs, that three-headed monster, probably what I'm most excited to watch. So, yeah, this is going to be fun. We're really close, man. What are we, less than 2 weeks away?
12 days till kickoff in Atlanta as we record.
Cut down this weekend.
This weekend is Labor Day, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
we
sir.
Got Labor Day this week. Okay, so I don't know whether you make Labor Day plans, sort of how you handle Labor Day. It's a good cookout day, et cetera. But this year, why not let Famous Dave's do the grilling for you, Brock? It's so much easier this way. Summer's, unfortunately, I'm not going to say it's winding down. I refuse to call Labor Day the end of summer here. Labor Day is the middle of summer.
It is.
Let's be very clear. Memorial Day is the end of winter,
yep.
where we start thinking about spring.
Then you get January.
Then you have to deal with January and July-uary. And then by August,
August
it starts
September.
Getting nice. I mean, it's been beautiful here. Perfect. I mean, other than it dumping rain at the barbecue I was at the other day.
Don't worry about that.
It's been beautiful, and it should go on for another month.
It's Amen. Like it's like the MLB season. It's yes. a 60-day deal.
It's 60 days, and Labor Day yes. smack in the middle of it.
Yes.
It goes from the early part of August to the beginning of October.
Correct.
That's summer here in Seattle. Yep. So we're halfway through. But if you've got a plan for Labor Day, let Famous Dave's do. If you haven't been to Famous Dave's, you got to check it out. The ribs are for me. St. Louis style spare ribs, but you could do whole country roasted chicken, Texas beef brisket. That's Howdy's thing right there. Georgia chopped pork. They got a lot of options. Okay. Online catering. They got the famous feasts, which you can get to go. Pitmaster favorite combos. You can even order meat by the pound, or I think the kilo if you want.
By
you
the
can,
stone. Yes. Like Magnus Ver Magnuson, world's strongest man. He got 4 stone of brisket.
They also have burgers, wings, sandwiches, homestyle desserts, the whole deal. And little secret, Dave's also now available for pickup and delivery in Northgate, very close to me, where they opened a little ghost kitchen last week. It's a ghost kitchen. Hopefully they don't get shadow banned in the ghost kitchen. So adult beverages available to go, perfect with the whole barbecue. Just go to togo.famousdaves.com, open 11 to 8 every day. All right, Brock. Well, this has become a bit of a tradition, right? As promised, we will speak to your newest partner, your newest play-by-play partner, Chris Myers from Fox Sports. Chris, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. It's good to be on with you guys.
All right, so Brock will be here eventually. I have to first conduct more of an interview of my own. It's more like a job interview slash like the way a parent might interview a prospective boy or girlfriend or something. Like, I want to make sure you're ready for working with Brock every day. So kind of start here. We've met, let's see, Kyle, who have we met throughout the years? Carter Blackburn, right? We've met Mark Jones.
Joe Tessitore.
Okay. Bob Wischusen. Brock, you be quiet. Kurt Menefee, right, who does...
Okay.
Joe Davis, most recently.
All very talented broadcasters who've gone on to big things and done well.
Of that group, who are you most like?
Ooh, wow, that's a wide range. You got young guys, you got veterans, you got, I don't know, of that group. Well, I'm in the Fox family, so Kurt Menefee and I kind of fall into that mode of, you know, you do the job, but, you know, you also can have a little fun that people are enjoying sports, so it's not so, so serious, even though it's a special kind of broadcast. I don't know, probably we're gonna have to find out.
Okay.
I would say I mean, I not to say I have my own style, I mean, but I kind of didn't, you know, I just kind of took a little bit of this and a little bit of that and all the things I've done to broadcast. So, and I've learned, I'm sure as Brock has learned, that you work with, yeah, I worked with Daryl Johnston, I worked with Rondé Barber, Tim Ryan, I worked on the crew with Troy Aikman before, so and then in different sports, you know, Jeff Gordon in NASCAR and Frank Thomas in baseball. So, you know, you adapt to your partner, your broadcast crew. So that's probably the best answer there. I'll have a better idea after we do a few games.
I was thinking about what will help you in the adaption, you know, how to adapt. I was thinking that maybe you've done the Westminster Dog Show the last few years, right? I mean, that may actually be your best bet.
I've worked with Portuguese water dogs, so I can handle anything. No, well, I would ask you if I know you're doing the interview, but I would say, what should I know about working with Brock? You've been around him in a number of scenarios.
Yes.
I got to be ready for anything.
Kyle and I could probably try to answer this together. Number one, don't let him instigate. He is an instigator.
Okay.
He will attempt to divide and conquer. He will try to pit you.
You hear this laugh. You're hearing
his little giggle, like, oh, I've done something. Oh, I've got a little practical joke in mind.
Chris, Saturday night.
A little bit of a prankster.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's good. They're not good pranks. Don't get worried.
Oh, they're annoying pranks.
Yes.
Okay. No candy before bed for Brock. That's one thing we worry
right.
about. Sugar before bed.
Especially candy corn.
Sugar guy. Okay.
If he has right. it, he ends up telling you about his dreams the next day, and nobody wants to hear about them.
Nobody, right. We have to focus. Although I'm a big sugar freak, too. I'm a big candy guy, so that could be trouble. Right? But anyway, okay, it's good to know.
All right, what else? I think that covered everything else you'll really need to discover on your own. It took me well over a year to even be okay with working with Brock, so hopefully right. you guys have a much quicker path to success.
Is the Brock you see on the air, how close is that to the Brock you hang out with? Because I, you know, I've met him before. We had our football seminar last year. I've seen it. I've watched him, that type of thing. So that is that, or is that, do we need to keep that a secret?
I would say a lot closer than it used to be. That's for sure. Like when Brock first started, he was a little stiff. He was figuring this out. Opinion wasn't
a little stiff. Okay,
a little. Now he's a little less stiff. So it's amazing how far he's come. over those years.
Okay. Are you two about done?
Yeah, I think we're done here. Are Brock, we done? You can jump
in. I didn't know Brock was listening. I'm sorry.
What I wanted to know was I was in Terranea last year, so my professional introduction to you, Chris, was largely your roast. Your 20 minute.
Yeah. Notice I went easy on you, Brock, because the first, you know, when you're in the mix there, I have to learn something. Now I've got material from Mike there. I've got material for next year's seminar where I could roast you like I did Aikman and Terry Bradshaw, those other guys.
Oh, those guys. What you did to Sam Rosen and Dick Stockton last year was just...
That's not right. How could you make fun of Sam Rosen? He's like 100.
That was the point. I think I said I saw him and Dick Stockton, and I said I've seen younger faces on dollar bills. Come on, you know. So, no, but they're, I don't know if I use that one or not, but they're great guys, and if I don't pick on them, then they're offended. It's like, you know, it's like they want to be included in the group. So I make sure that nothing is so sensitive that it really would offend everybody, except Tim Brando, and he deserved it because he was giving me a hard time. So.
Oh, that's good. Well, we are excited. We're excited for Brock to do NFL games. I guess that
I am too, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, but my last question along these lines will be a slightly more serious question. Is if you have, not quite advice, but you've done some of the college game. Obviously, you've been doing the NFL game for a long time. Where is the difference in terms of calling those two sports? I mean, I think most of us can kind of understand the difference watching them. But how is the college game different to cover from the NFL game?
Well, I just think in general, the NFL has a system set up, whether you're like reporting on the sidelines for a postseason game or up in the booth. First of all, less numbers of players. And you get, it's not that the college game isn't cooperating, but you just get information, I think, quicker for the audience from down on the sidelines or when a player is not playing or something is going on. Even with sideline reporters, sometimes it's difficult to have everything covered. With the NFL, you have backup layers of whether it's a team representative or something coming through to give you the information. Hey, it's coach's decision. That's why this guy's here. He's got a little elbow thing they're checking on. So to me, that's the one thing that just jumps out at me having done that. But I like, yeah, I mean, I think this is for me and for with Greg Jennings, part of this group, working for the first time together. Greg is one of the guys doing it on Fox who's the closest to, you know, from playing the game. And obviously Brock, having seen a lot of players in college football, and does Seahawks at the preseason games, which I see a lot up here with out on the West Coast. So, that's to me, and I like to, this is not a knock at any other position, but I just know even having done tryouts for guys who wanted to come into Fox and Kevin Burkhardt, and I sometimes will do them in the studio, it just, you know, quarterbacks generally see the game broader, wider, and so when you're doing a broadcast, that helps. That's just a great start, whether it's a college game or an NFL game.
Chris, I think you're entering, what did I read, your 45th year of broadcasting games, is that correct?
Yes, I was back with Dick Stockton. No, but you're right. I at age 60, you're not that far off. I mean, it's really more than four. I started at age 16 doing radio. In the 70s, I left my algebra class from high school with my tape recorder to go to Fort Lauderdale Stadium to interview Terry Bradshaw and Chuck Noll, and then I drove across the causeway to interview Staubach and Landry.
So I was a year off. So 44 years. So this is your 44th year of broadcasting.
That's amazing. I love that story. Right. I was reading about that earlier. What of in all those 44 years, what is the most incredible thing you've seen in person?
Wow. Well, I mean, one of the amazing, I was there, the reporter on the field when the Red Sox finally broke through and won the World Series, right? So I interviewed, you know, the first few, Curt Schilling, Johnny Damon. And then the next year, the White Sox won the World Series. I was there interviewing those guys. So in terms of baseball, kind of, I was there for the Earthquake World Series, which covering that with the A's and Giants in 89, as my first year as a young reporter at ESPN, so when you see something like that, it changes everything. It's more than just about sports. So there's so many. And in football, in the NFL, I was there when, of course, Oklahoma was upset by Boise State. I was the field reporter for that game, which was a breakthrough moment and the crazy. And then the proposal, remember Ian Johnson proposed to his girlfriend, and I was there in the middle of that kind of pushed that along a little bit. I got criticized, but I didn't want the guy to blow the moment. You know, he needed to kind of get the word out. And then NFL wise, you know, the two Super Bowls covering the postseason, calling some games, but the last two, the Chiefs being on that sideline for their win with Mahomes and Andy Reid, and then a few years earlier when Brady led the comeback, I was on the Patriots sideline and got to him after that comeback against Atlanta, the overtime win, and the greatest Super Bowl comeback win ever. So there's a lot of those things that you're just lucky to be a part of and be around, and then you gotta do the job.
So how did that work? Did Chris Peterson tell you? Did he say, "Hey, Chris, come here. We're going to run the Statue of Liberty, and for a 2-point deal, you know, and if we win and Ian gets it, and you're interviewing him after the game, let's make sure you help him along with his with his engagement." Is that how that all went down?
No, I didn't. Well, no, it's funny because we knew that there was some trick plays going to practice. We had seen, and Peterson was very helpful with that. You know, you keep those things quiet, Brock. I know you're a big go to practice, observe kind of guy, and that's important in preparation when teams allow and you get the access that maybe some others don't. So we knew there was some trick plays, but obviously at that point of the game, remember that was swinging back and forth, and I knew that Ian Johnson had a girlfriend was on the cheerleading squad, but I had no idea. So when the game ended, first I interviewed the quarterback, whose name escapes me at the moment. Brock, you probably remember, but with that tremendous upset. But Johnson scored, and then because Johnson was in the corner with a crowd around him, and I ran over to him. The producer was telling me from Fox, "Hey, they haven't set up the stage yet for the trophy, you know, with Coach Peterson. So can you get one other player? Go ahead and see if you can get it." So I ran over to Johnson, had a lot of people around him. And he said, I said, "I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we come on live? This is the national." He goes, when he said national, you know, that registered. And then he said, "Yeah, we could do this, but I have a proposal to make." And I'm in my head, I'm just thinking, is he proposing a new playoff system or something like that? And so, really true story. So I'm doing the interview and the producer's ready to wrap me, but I hadn't heard the proposal yet of what the new playoff system was. Or, you know, remember Boise State was trying to break through. And so I just kind of said, "Hey, what about the proposal?" Something like that. And that's what I saw the cheerleader, which I assumed was his girlfriend, come running over, and he started to get down on his knee. And that's what he said. And I didn't know it was a wedding proposal, and he left the ring back at the hotel. So anyway, it was one of those. But people said I kind of blew the surprise, but it was like, you know, we were running out of time. He was going to miss his chance on national TV to propose. And by the way, I've talked to him later, and he thanked me for reminding him. And the last time I talked to him, he was on the Vikings practice squad years later. He you know, they were doing fine. They were married and happy. And so
you didn't get an invite to the wedding, though.
No, because I would have, like, the reception, I would have probably blow the surprise there with a cake or something. but that was – it's funny that soccer, when you ask that, Mike, about or Brock, it's just one of those funny moments. I'm rattling them off in my head. But that was one of those more unusual things that stood out. You just know when you're in those live – which is what's great about what we're doing in sports is a live situation. You know, yeah, you can make mistakes and – but you call it like you see it, you react based on what you know and what's happening around you.
Well, I think what's interesting, one of the parts of that story that I find most interesting, maybe just as a member of the media, is that a lot of your moments are ones where you were on the sideline as opposed to in the booth. And you're somewhat unique in that you've done, you know, studio and play-by-play and been a reporter on the field. But, you know, the reporter on the field gets right in the middle of that action afterwards and in some ways just takes a completely different instinct, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, you do the imagine like a motion picture film, you do so much work that you, I mean, that's generally what you do when you prepare for a game, so much work that you don't use, but you have to have it. But as a sideline reporter, you're really a minimal part of things until there's something goes wrong, or right, there's an injury, or they need you to, you know, and that's when, you know, you have to, your preparation helps, but then also being able to handle a live situation.
Awesome.
Yeah, I didn't even get into the studio doing some late sports centers with Mike Tirico and Linda Cohn and, you know, Dan Patrick, some of those really, really good people in the fun days of sports center at ESPN that were great to work with. And when they did up close, you know, interviewing, I had some fascinating, it's where you got to know people like Bill Murray and Charles Barkley and who are lifelong friends now. And then the first interview with O.J. Simpson after the first live interview after both of his trials, which was a controversial moment, but the most highly rated up close show ever. And was a fascinating situation. But that was kind of the studio side of it.
Well, it's so interesting that the reporter part is there's so much chaos. I've been out on the field after a World Series and on a court after a NBA game as a local reporter. And I think what struck me was just the amount of chaos in that moment, and then also how important those relationships are you just mentioned, because if there's 10,000 reporters all trying to get one guy, you've got to have enough of a relationship to have that exclusive that you need and know which person is going to be the most relevant when you can get them. It really is like dealing with chaos theory.
It is. And even when you're, it's not like, even when you're the broadcast network paying all those rights fees, you have better access leading up to. But once the game ends, I mean, it's a, as you can see, it's a madhouse. People are, and especially a Super Bowl where you have international media and that Atlanta Super Bowl with the Patriots coming back. You know, you thought the game was going to end, so they always let the entire media, and you know this, down on the field with a minute or two to go in the fourth quarter, whatever, so people can get to the point to do their jobs. So they were there, they're waiting to go to overtime, and the you know, from 28-3, the Patriots come back, and it was, remember, that was the Deflategate, and Tom Brady's mom had an illness, a serious illness, so there was a lot of emotion in that. And I was trying to, from the sideline, I mean, we have usually, there's sometimes only in the Super Bowl a field producer, and they'll sometimes even give you a league representative to help you. But they got wiped out in the crowd. I mean, there were elbows flying, people knocked down. I mean, it was that crazy. And I had to just stick the mic in there and use the overhead camera to start. And I knew Tom was drained, physically, emotionally. But to me, that's such an important part that I think gets lost sometimes. It's not shoving just a mic in the face of the player or coach, but after the sooner you get to them after that victory or the loss, sometimes when you have to go to the locker room and talk to a losing coach, and I had to do that with Mike McCarthy and the Packers after that great Seahawks comeback. I had the Green Bay sideline that day in that playoff game where they had the fantastic comeback. But anyway, I think that raw emotion, and usually they don't even hear your question. They're more just expressing the joy or the anger if it's a Richard Sherman or somebody. You know, and that's what you want. You want that real emotion there of, you know, hey, boy, we just did it and we stuck together. Or, you know, hey, yeah, and then you try to say, hey, can get the key play here. Tell me what, you know, how you did that, or when you were down by 10, what was said. And whether they answer the question or not, you're getting the real person in that moment. And I think that's an important thing for the audience to see. And I like that as a fan when I'm watching a game, whether it's a playoff game or even a, you know, regular season game.
Hey, Chris, Jared Zabransky texted me, the Boise quarterback, very upset that you didn't remember his name. Very
thank you. Okay.
And I thought you guys had more relationship than that.
Yeah, that would we built. So I apologize to not staying in touch. But had he, you know, gotten engaged in the game, we probably would have hung out. You know, I don't know.
Very true. Hey, my last thing here for you is all of these years and experiences and incredible stories and everything else. As you're preparing for this season, in the times that we find ourselves in the midst of still a pandemic, we've got a meeting this week. You and I do, with our Fox executives, to hear the plan for us on the road and testing and everything else. Of all of your years of experience, have you ever gone into a season of a sport prepared or unprepared, like we all are, for this upcoming season?
No, never before. And I've never seen anything like this as just a sports fan and what's going on in our country. And I covered the 94, the baseball strike that wiped out the World Series. I was the reporter for ESPN, spending time with the commissioner and Donald Fair and players from unions and player reps. And then even in the NFL, where there were labor disputes that stopped sports. And I'm just taking it from that angle. So this goes above and beyond all of that, because there's safety. And I think there's a more of an awareness on my part, on all of our part, of how we're going to do this, that we have a job to do, but there are so many other factors involved. So yes, it's going to be a different, there'll be our normal game team preparation, and I shouldn't say normal, we'll approach it normally, but it'll be done differently in terms of who we can be around and that type of thing. And then there's kind of the medical or health and safety preparation and job that we'll also all have to do, that we're responsible for. So, but I'm really grateful for, and especially the NFL, but all the sports, for trying to kind of work through this. I think there's ways the two things the worst to do when we have something is to panic or do nothing. And so, you know, we're going to learn along the way and adapt. And I think the NFL is kind of guiding us on that. And I'm frankly glad that we're able to go to the games, that Fox and the networks and the NFL are saying, we want you there in the stadium to call a broadcast, even if it's going to be a little bit of extra, or there might be some risk if you're not comfortable. Okay, that's your choice, but at least moving forward with this. And so, yes, the challenges will be different, but when we get to the, you know, the kickoff on Sunday and they're playing, I just think America runs on football, and it's going to be a great feeling for all of us, and it'll help us get through a very, very difficult year.
You were on the sideline for the Seahawks comeback against the Packers a few years ago?
Yes. Aaron Andrews had the Seattle sideline, and I had the Packers one. That tremendous where they, yeah.
You know, the moment that gets lost in that game is the two-point conversion, where Russell made, turned around like five times, threw it up in the air, it should have been picked, and then it fell right into Luke Wilson's hands. Remarkable play.
That was, again, when Russell Wilson just died. And those things do get lost unless they're at the end of a game or something like that. But there was a confidence, but I could tell. It's funny that they were playing it the Packers sideline. There was not that they were going to let that lead get away. I didn't know that, but I could sense that they were playing it a little too safe when they got the lead. And I know Aaron Rodgers was not liking it about, you know, hey, we got to stick the dagger in here. Let's not just ease it. And then of course Seattle did some magical things, and the Seahawks did and came back. But I will give McCarthy credit, because he was really, I mean, stunned going to the locker room and having the interview. After, I think he even used that, he doesn't normally use it, but he used a curse word, and, you know, like, and then caught himself and said, I apologize. But it wasn't in anger. It was like more in shock. What just happened here? What just happened? I had to talk to my team and we have to recover from this. But yeah, that was, you do so many games, but those things do jump out at you. That was a tremendous, just a great game. And that's the other thing you look at too. If somebody's got to win it and somebody's got to lose it. But if it's an entertaining game, then I think, from a TV broadcast standpoint, we're happy.
Well, that's a good lesson for you as you get ready to work with Brock. That's probably some words you'll find yourself saying after some of the broadcasts. Brock usually curses more than anyone I know.
No, he's the clean cut professional right here. We'll have no problem here. I feel sorry for the rest of the crew putting up with us, but we'll be fine. This will be, and we got a great one to start. The Vikings and Packers. My goodness, I you know, the two playoff teams from last year. So I'm looking forward to it. Even with all the challenges, I think it should be a lot of fun.
Brock cursed once while we were at spring training. Accidentally, a word slipped out, and a true story. I'm not making this up. Kyle is right here. He can attest to this. The next day, Brock went to church twice.
AM and PM.
In order to make up for the one curse word that had escaped his lips. So,
thank you, Chris, for
joining
us. Chris,
it's your job to hold him accountable on the road. Okay?
We know you got to run, Chris. Have a wonderful day, and can't wait to see you in Minnesota.
I picture, by the way, I'm not making fun. You know, I kid because I care. Kind of like the Philip Rivers, where he really gets angry. It's a gosh darn it or something that extreme.
There you go.
So that's what I'll be listening for. Brock, I look forward to it. Mike, it was good talking to you guys, and let's have a great season. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Chris. So let's finish this up here, Brock, and we'll do it in kind of different ways. First of all, just it's great to talk to Chris Myers, a very entertaining fellow. I'm really looking forward to the two of you guys together.
There's a lot of Chris Egan in him, and Kyle said that.
Yeah, you know, I can see that.
Yes, Kyle's chatting with him before he jumped on with us, and he mentioned that, and I'm like,
he's like Chris Egan's impression of a sportscaster. When Chris, and then like Chris at the end, well, there's some people accused me of pushing him in that direction. I don't know, I didn't do it. It's like Chris Egan, I was innocent, I wasn't a part of those shenanigans.
And they right. love stories, and they love people. Yeah. And what an amazing history of 44 years.
Sheesh. He's been everywhere. I mean, really, his. Goodness. From Westminster Dog Show to NASCAR to NFL to NBA to NFL, I mean, MLB. Baseball. I mean, just
hanging
amazing.
Out with you in a playoff game in baseball, wasn't he?
Yeah, I did see. Yeah, that's a story for another day. But it's a pretty interesting career he's had. So I'm so excited to hear how that sounds with you and him this year. So congrats. I'll tell you, man, you know, he mentioned it. You guys talked about it a little bit there a moment ago. But just what's happened to sports this year is bizarre. We've just never seen anything like this.
Yeah, I mean, 2020 is right. 2020 has been a year unlike any of our lives since 1976, since we were born.
Well, 78, but thanks. Yeah,
since 76.
Don't start throwing 2 years on it for me. I appreciate that. Still only born in 78, but yeah, I mean, I don't think the world's seen anything like this since 68. But you know, sports, from cancellations to postponements to rules changes and shortened seasons. And then the social activism, Brock. I mean, just never seen anything like it. Everything has changed in sports. Everything.
Yep.
Remarkable.
And players boycotting playoff basketball games. And just out. and just taking that stance and being willing to take that stance amidst, you know, the consequence from it, the noise from it, and saying, nope, this is what we believe in. And then watching MLB and MLS and the WNBA and the NHL and everybody in the NFL canceling practices and following suit to take that stand. 2020 has been like, unlike, you know, there's not been a year even close.
So I got to ask you some questions about it, because I don't think my opinion on this is going to be particularly interesting or surprising. I support it. I'm happy with what they're doing. I support the Mariners for doing what they did last week and deciding not to play that night. Quite frankly, I wish they'd gone even farther and just said, no, we're not playing. We're not postponing. We're just not playing. Mm-hmm. If you want to dock us the pay, dock us the pay. Like, I think they could have gone even farther.
Do you think the players would have done that?
I think that they could have. I don't know why they didn't, to be honest with you. I think it's a worthwhile question. But
I'm curious in that, in some of these, right? I'd just be curious to see, like Muhammad Ali,
right,
3 years.
Being really willing to sacrifice.
He sacrificed 3 years, yep, of his prime and count, you know, in today's dollars.
Colin what Kaepernick.
That would have been. I mean, it just, yes. Yep. So, you know, did they in the NBA or in any of these sports leagues say, yep, I'm going to sacrifice
my
paycheck?
Well, I think they did in the NBA. The fact that the league turned around and then canceled all of the games that night is different. They didn't. I mean, if I understand it right, the Bucks said, we're not playing. Do whatever you want. We're not playing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit different than we've talked to the other team and we've agreed to postpone till tomorrow, et cetera, which, by the way, I'd still support. But it doesn't have quite the same level of impact as, we're not playing. Do whatever you want. You want to give us the L? Fine. Yep. We don't care. There's more important things than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I support all of it. And I certainly support what Pete said the other day. I mean, I don't think any of that's very surprising. You know, your point of view on this, I think, is an incredibly interesting and nuanced one. When we were talking about Colin Kaepernick a few years ago, you were not in favor of what he was doing. And we had some, I think, pretty good conversations about that. When we talked a few weeks ago, when this became an issue again, mm-hmm, you said that, and I don't mean to paraphrase for you, that you had sort of reconsidered some of that and maybe thought a little bit differently about it now than you did then after hearing some of the stories that people were telling about their lives, et cetera. So as you, and I apologize if I don't get that exactly right.
Yeah, I think actually you and I shared a very similar voice back then. And that was, if you're going to do this, you better be able to voice why you're doing this.
Yeah.
And make it clear. And that is where, to me, Colin never did. And even through his process of the first 12 months of that and some of the different, I just never knew what is this truly about.
But in retrospect, I don't know that that's entirely fair to ask of him. I mean, he obviously was committed enough to this to have not played football since.
Well, the league and others, you know, he was brought into other teams and the other team.
But he's stayed committed. I mean, if he really wanted to play football, he could have, you know, denounced it all and said, I'm back and I'm not going to do that ever again. Mm-hmm. He didn't do that. It obviously means enough to him.
Absolutely.
You're right. Maybe he's not the perfect spokesman. Maybe he hasn't, you know, nailed the message. But,
well, at that time, that's what I think I was asking for. I think that's what teammates and many others were clamoring for. And I think now we can go back and when, you know, Pete this summer said, oh, if we could all do it all over again, who knows? But that is what I think you and me and many were clamoring for at that time was just, hey, man, if you're going to take this principled stand, mm-hmm, tell me your policy and principles behind it. That's what I want to know. I want to know what your principles are here. I want to know what your policy is here. I want to know. I want to learn.
So what do you
think? I think in 4 years we have learned and seen pretty clearly, and I have certainly heard from so many in this field and so many that are crying out, as Pete said, that they want policy change. Mm-hmm. I want to see policy change, and we have seen it. I was on a call last week with the league and Roger Goodell and the $250 million that they have put towards these players and the players who've been the feet on the street, like Doug Baldwin, who went out there. And I think there's been 8 different policy changes to the judicial system or to legislation, not the judicial system, to legislation, to policy within departments and communities around the country. There's already been 8 different pieces of legislation written, and they want to see more.
Yeah.
And that's what I want. Right. That's what I clamor for, Mike. Right. That's where I have listened to this. And I love that it's not just been word, it's been deed, that you've been out there actively in those communities. I think the Seahawks and Doug Baldwin did a beautiful job of that years ago in the way they handled that and went into communities and have built community centers and went into the police departments and tried to learn and then initiate some change.
Yeah,
and the league is behind that.
I'll agree with you, but also say that I think that none of that happens if it weren't for Colin Kaepernick getting this started. that while you may be right, he may not have had the clear messaging or policy recommendations that we've seen here in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if the new stuff happens without what he did. Starting the ball rolling, knocking people off of their spot, forcing this to be a conversation, which I think was mm-hmm. his goal. You're going to talk about this. Whether I can tell you everything I want you to do or not, you're going to talk about this because I'm going to sit there and protest during the national anthem. And while that's going to get all kinds of criticism, and did, mm-hmm. it did get people talking.
Yep.
And it did get the ball rolling. And a couple of years later, in the grand scheme of things, not that much longer later, we're sitting here watching what I think is just a remarkable series of events with the Baltimore Ravens, you know, with the video they put out saying these are the specific policy things we would like the majority leader to address. Yeah. I mean, like, you've seen some really impressive,
no question.
I don't think any of that happens if Colin Kaepernick doesn't get the ball rolling a couple of years ago.
Yeah, possibly.
And Jeremy Lane.
I can't answer obviously. That. I don't know for sure. But yes, it certainly was momentous and emotional and passionate, which, you know, we have seen from countless players, from Jamal Murray the other night after his unbelievable 50-point game. And if you've not been watching that playoff series, unbelievable. Coach Carroll was animated. He was emotional. You know, you could feel it. He was shaking in his emotion. You could feel that from players. So yeah, across all the different leagues, you've certainly sensed that. And you know what? That's the essence of it for me, Mike, is I want to see it put into action, and we're seeing it, and we're seeing these leagues committed to it. And that's awesome. That is using your platform to promote the change that you know is personal to so many of these guys.
What did you think of Pete?
Thought he was really emotional, man. Really, really passionate, and that was probably a direct relationship to how it is with his team behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. What we're not privy to in those meeting rooms. We've been privy to it to a degree. We were always separated by a wall, but we could hear the emotion in that team room. Many times it was music, but you could hear it. I mean, Pete is a personal guy. He's a passionate guy. He's a deeply emotional guy. I think become maybe even more emotional mm-hmm. At this stage of the game is because he knows he didn't have that much time left with the platform that he has, and he was tremendously passionate about it.
He sure was, and you know, there's a bunch of things that I kind of take out of that, and some of it is what Danny wrote, that Pete just doesn't care about the folks who will be turned off by it, and I think that's a important part of it. Some of it is, you know, obviously the emotion and the way he feels, and I think he's excited to be in the front lines of this thing. I think that appeals to him because mm-hmm. he truly means it and believes it. And it also is fitting for a guy who has long been the ultimate players coach to be the one right there leading the way with the players.
Yes.
I mean, it is so fitting for who Pete is. He's truly a players coach. And this is why. And for a long time, that was sort of viewed as a negative and kind of, you know, obviously there are folks who think that's not the way to coach. But he's been showing that it is. And more over the last decade, coaches have been like Pete instead of going the other way. And I think the reason isn't just because he lets them get away with stuff, which is sort of the old rap on Pete.
Right.
It's because he's on their side.
Yeah.
Because he believes in them.
Yeah.
He really believes in them, listens to them, takes the time.
He believes in the best in them.
Doesn't put himself above them and is able to stand with them. I think it's a pretty remarkable thing.
You know, it's interesting timing-wise that we're having this conversation, and sport lost an icon who was ahead of his time in John Thompson, 78-year-old, passed away this week in the former Georgetown Hoyas. Were you a Hoyas guy growing up?
No.
You were 2 years younger than me. So you were probably even a little younger in the early 80s.
It's more Georgia Tech guy.
You're more Georgia Tech guy.
Three amigos.
That's fine. Yeah. But I was chatting with Jay Billis about this, and Jay Billis said, you know, one of the great misperceptions about John Thompson was that people would say, oh, he just didn't care about others' opinions. He just didn't care, right? He also boycotted. He took a stand. He was mm-hmm. so against Prop 48 and thought it was so inequitable and was just not going to stand for it. And in many ways, John Thompson ahead of his time. And Billis said it wasn't, and this was Jay's opinion, and to some degree, I think it's the same opinion I have about Pete Carroll, where I disagree with Danny a little bit. It's not that Danny or not that Pete doesn't care what other people think. And Jay Billis said he cared. John Thompson cared what other people thought. And he knew what they would start to think, and it would lead to further change in conversation. And I think Pete knew what he was doing. I think, yes, there's going to be, and there was some criticism, some of the broad brush stuff or what have you. And I think Pete knew exactly what he was doing and wants to have that conversation and embrace that debate that he feels so strongly and passionate about.
Pretty awesome. All right. Well, that's a lot for us today. Thank you to Chris Myers. Thank you, Brock, for a great conversation today. When we do this next week, we will be on the precipice of starting the NFL season. I can't wait, man. I'll talk to you next week. And for everybody else, the hey.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!